Blog Talk.
I got a star on my car and one on my chest, a gun on my hip and the right to arrest. I'm a guy who's a boss on this highway, so watch out what you're doing when you're driving my way. If you break the law, you'll hear from me. I know I'm working for the state. I'm a highway patrol.
Hi, I'm Kevin Rutherford with an important message to improve your bottom line. Do you want to save money and protect your engine better? Of course you do. So do what I do.
Good evening and welcome to Audio Road. I'm your host, retired transport officer Dale Howard. For those of you who are new to the show, I retired out of a 23-year law enforcement career, the last seven of which were spent in commercial vehicle enforcement. I'm too honest to steal, too lazy for a paper route. So I did what comes naturally. I'm an owner-operator. I bought a truck. In my last 7 years on commercial enforcement, I was a CVSA instructor, a hazmat inspector. So I bring a unique perspective to the table. Tonight, we are in for a real treat. I've got as my special guest, Robert Enns. Robert is the dispatch supervisor with Bison Transport, the carrier I'm leased to, and we're going to talk about what we can do to best foster a good positive relationship with dispatch and help everybody's bottom line. Robert, good evening and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dale.
I really appreciate you taking an hour out of your evening to share with us what we need to do to have a better relationship with dispatch. So if you don't mind, just how about a little bio of Robert Enns and how you got from there to here?
when I first graduated high school, I was looking around at some of my friends and looking at what the career paths they have chosen, and I was doing a couple of different sort of labor type of jobs, and I decided that I wanted a unique challenge that was going to give me an opportunity to get outside of my regular hometown that I was born and raised. And I decided to get my Class 1 license, and I started driving long haul when I was 21 years old. And I drove wild card with anywhere and everywhere for just over 2.5 years, all over the States and Canada. And after doing that, I got into a bit of a regular routine, doing designated run in Canada, going out to the east, and then after a year and a half, turned around and started going west for a period of time. Got off the road driving truck for a number of years, and decided that I was looking for the challenge to get back into the transportation industry, so I started with Bison in the dispatch position about 5 years ago. So
nice.
Since then, I've had a... Yeah, Since then, in 5 years, I've had an opportunity to move through several different positions within the organization, and it's been good. It's been the transportation industry is certainly unique, and every day is a little different from the next, so I'm enjoying it.
Well, and you know, I can honestly say you looked after me in more ways than one, and it was always a pleasure to work with you, Robert, and that's why I thought, you know what, it's you're a natural fit to come onto the show tonight and help dispel, you know, that us and them mentality. For those of you listening in, if you've got a question for Robert or myself, just push one on your phone, and Lisa's got the night off tonight, so I'm screening the call, so we'll just give you the last four digits of your phone number and welcome you onto the show, and you're on. Those of you who are listening on the internet, we've still got a few lines open. Why don't you jump in? The number to dial is 347-884-8327. And Robert, we've already got a caller, so let's go to 2835. And welcome to the program.
Good evening, Dale.
Oh, good evening.
It's a pleasure to speak with you and your guests tonight. I was wanting to pick your brain of your knowledge in the since you was a motor carrier officer.
Okay.
Do you ever see them going back to splitting the sleeper berth for a single driver?
You know, I'd like to get out my crystal ball and give you an answer to that, but you know, the way the FMCSA is going, I don't know what path they're going to take. I think it's going to be a give and take. We're going to have to. My personal feeling is we're going to adopt electronic logs. They're going to fold on that issue, and then they'll give us back that 2 hour break that we can stop the clock. That's kind of how I read this. But, you know, if I was any good at this, I'd be in Vegas playing the lottery.
Well, I listened to several guests the other morning on Dave Nemo's show. I try to catch all I can when I can. I've argued this point with several of my friends. If they had the technology to tell when you was fatigued, that would be the best science ever there was. Because I can't just lay down and go to sleep. And I struggle with the issue of running completely legal. And I like to run completely legal as close as possible. But to lay there for 5 or 6 hours and look at the ceiling in this sleeper berth is not benefiting me as a human being, and is not benefiting the people out there on the road when I leave here not properly rested.
Oh, I hear you, and you know, I'm running refrigerated freight through Canada and the U.S., and yeah, I'm in the same boat. There's days that I would just love to be able to stop the clock and make things work, and you know, under the current rules, we can't. But like I say, I think when the proposed rulemaking is issued for input, I think Ann Farrell heard that message quite loud and clear during the listening sessions, and I think she's I think that's going to go in there. And like I say, it's going to be a give and take. We're going to have to give up something. So I think EOBRs are going to come on to appease Crash and Public Citizen and everybody else. And I think to make it more palatable to us, you know, they'll give us that opportunity back.
I've been out here since 1987, and I run a lot of regional stuff got used to being able to work my paperwork where I could sleep when I needed to sleep, and I've really struggled with these new hours of service to the point. If it comes to electronic logging, I'm probably gonna leave the industry.
I do feel your frustration, but you know what? Total compliance with logs can work. And the EOBRs can be used to your advantage, and I don't think it's going to be quite the end of the world that we think it's going to be. And I'm sorry to kind of leave it at that with you, but I've got a bunch of other callers. But Robert, how do you see that with dispatch? And compliance.
Well, and again, from the time spent over the road, and as well as the time that I've spent in the office, and certainly with our organization, we preach and we live 100% legal 100% of the time. And even though we've, you know, people who have come into our company who haven't been used to that or may have heard it originally in maybe an orientation, and then the company practices different when they start getting out on the road, it's really beneficial for everyone. It's beneficial for the company to make sure that they're compliant, meeting the laws, regulations, you know, that it's every day it's becoming a little more strict and there's more eyes watching out for that sort of stuff. But more so from the office, you know, when the dispatch is in a position where you don't have to try and keep your lives straight. You can quite simply, you know, the hours, you know, the parameters that you have to work within, and that's what you work off. Day in, day out, doesn't change. You don't waver. 100% legal, 100% of the time. It really does make everyone's lives a little bit easier. Certainly, again, it's not the way I was used to running, and it was something that I had to get accustomed to with when I came into the office. But it never wavers, and so it's easy to stay true to the message because the laws are very clear. So at least it gives us a defined parameter to work within. So.
Well, and it's I know you and I have scratched heads with it, and you know, you're trying to make something work, and you know, the law is the law, and you know, that's kind of the hand we're dealt, and you deal with it accordingly. Just to kind of, you know, put the sky is falling to rest with EOBRs, we implemented EOBRs in our turnpike operation. How long has that been now?
That was just been implemented as of late, and you're right. We've started just with our turnpikes, and you know, we will integrate that into all of our units. But you know, that has just been in a short term now as of late, and of course with the majority of our turnpikes, we are working on a dedicated schedule and regular runs, so it's not as you know, for a lot of guys where you're just doing. Again, open board stuff, that it's not quite the same, but certainly it comes into play that with certain delays and what have you, you have to watch the different windows and make sure that you're staying absolutely compliant. So it is a good way to go for sure. It is, again, best interest for the driver, and again for the company. It's obviously we're sharing roadways with a lot of other people, and we have to make sure that we're doing our part.
You know, and the I guess the bottom line, the drivers are still making as good a living, I think, as what they made before, because we did run compliant paper-wise, and you know, freight's still getting delivered. So I don't, you know, we as an industry are always terrified of change, and I'm holding up my hand now because I'm probably one of the most guilty guys we got of being a dinosaur and not as quick to embrace change. But you know, at the end of the day, with a little growing pains, it does work, and you just kind of work around with what you've got.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything's clearly defined. We know what we have to work within, and again, for the driver's sake, and for the people managing and trying to make sure they're doing the best they can with the assets they have, it just makes it a little bit safer for everyone. But you're absolutely right. There's some growing pains there. There's going to be that period of time where everyone's going to have to get used to it, but it will come around.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's we got to do what we got to do. Let's go on to 7733, and before we jump into him, to that caller, I just want to let everybody know that if you want to jump into the conversation here, just push 1 on your call, and we'll get you on. So 7733, you're live on the air.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Yeah, running legal, now that you started to show up with that, it does work. I'm going 92 kilometers an hour all day long at 56 miles an hour, and I log it as I drive it, and I'm still getting my 11,000 miles in, so it does work. It's dispatched right. I'm getting a lot of feedback beeping noises in here. Do you have that on your end as well?
No, I don't.
Okay, then I'll just continue then for you on my line. The reason why I called, I was afraid I would go off topic too much, but now that I've heard that you're with Bison Transport, might not be too off topic, because I know Bison's very progressive on newer technology. I'm having a real hard time finding any kind of regulations as far as lift axles, tag axles, and stuff like that in Manitoba and across Western Canada. The only thing I found so far is that we need lift axle permits on trailers, but the question was, do you have any idea or any place that a guy could go to find out what can be done or can't be done?
Yeah, I know Alberta is dead set against lift axles, so they're not legal in Alberta. And you know what? If you go onto the internet, do you run all across Canada or just into Ontario?
I run out of Manitoba, pretty much anywhere from Quebec to BC and down south.
Yeah, you know, I know Alberta is going to give you nothing but grief, because we just don't recognize a lift axle. Worst case scenario, they're going to make you chain it up. The trailer axles, the only lift axle they allow on trailers is that automatic system that as soon as it senses weight, it's fully engaged. But it's, I think it's going to be a while before they go to lift axles again. BC had a real bad taste in their mouth with lift axles. Probably 10, 15 years ago, there was a mail carrier that was using them and caused some hate and discontent in BC. So that's kind of kiboshed that. But, you know, the best thing to do is if you jump on the internet and each jurisdiction in their transportation section will let you know what they're going to allow and what they aren't going to allow. And worst case scenario, stop into a scale and, you know, the guys aren't going to bite. And, you know, they'll be more than happy to, you know, look up the regulation, and they'll even photocopy it and give it to you and let you know what you got to comply with.
Well, I did that already. I was in Headingley a couple of weeks ago and I had a talk with them for about an hour, and I was still confused. And we started talking about RTAC and non-RTAC vehicles, and it is just a mess. But the point is pretty much they want the industry to go greener to save fuel, but yet you want to do something, but you can't because of regulations that just...
You know what? And I hear you completely, and the only thing I can say is somebody way smarter than me dreamed all this stuff up, and unfortunately I was just kind of pegged in the middle.
Yeah.
When I was on the job, so yeah, I think the bottom line is it's going to be another couple of years before the lift axle is embraced, because they've got to come up with a system for a tractor that will sense load and engage it automatically.
Yeah, my idea was to begin with just run a single drive with a tag that is on the ground, or just use the lift axle to leave the airbags out. But and even then, the officer in Headingley told me he wasn't even quite sure whether or not those axles in the drive tandem had to be driven or not. So it's really confusing. I just don't know which way to turn anymore. And
no, I'm afraid in Canada, where you're stuck with either the traditional single axle or a full tandem, and you know, it's until all the jurisdictions get together, that's, you know, I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Okay.
So I'm sorry I couldn't give you a better answer, but that's the good old government. Let's move on to 7589, and good evening. You're live with Dale and Robert.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Evening.
Well, I'll probably be the one to start the ruckus here.
Okay.
The thing that kind of got my attention was the President Meagle part, and well, that's a really interesting concept. And with you running reefer, on average, I mean, spending time with shippers and receivers, depending on the location, could involve a pretty fair amount of time. Agreed?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the multiple picks are a killer.
Yeah.
And
even when it comes to the, you know, that's on both the shipping and receiving end.
Yep.
But is the FMCSA planning on addressing this?
Well, you know, in a perfect world, yes. I know Ann Farrell spoke to the association that represents shippers and receivers, and she, you know, kind of laid it out to them that she expected them to be part of the solution to the compliance umbrella rather than being the problem. Because again, that was very well identified in the listening sessions that, yeah, we're wasting a pile of time, you know, waiting either at a dock or waiting for a dock. And, yeah, I mean, I haul produce, and I can, you know, we're fortunate now that the, you know, we seem to have,
well,
and our customer has gone to a central, you know, pick location, so all the multi picks show up there. But yeah, I spend a lot of time sitting around and waiting, and it becomes a huge time management issue.
The produce side, you guys tend to get dealt with a little bit faster than the dry boxes when it comes to the grocery warehouses. And I'm sure there isn't one person here listening who hasn't pulled a dry box and hit a grocery warehouse where there's not some horror story somewhere where you're sitting there for 6 hours. And then you're faced with getting your next pickup and making an appointment for the following day, which is next to impossible. And then you have dispatchers, pardon me, screaming in your ear, why aren't you there yet?
Well, you know what? You know, and this is a perfect opportunity. And Robert, once I've had my 2 cents, I'll let you jump in here. But traditionally, you know, the bulk of our business is dry van business. And the grocery business is challenging with some of their appointments. But Robert, how do we pull that off? And how do we, you know, how do we help with the dispatcher screaming at you?
Well, I don't, you know, I guess I'm fortunate where I don't work in an environment where we wouldn't have a dispatcher screaming. And certainly with delays at a shipper or at a receiver, quite simply, it's beyond your control. Certainly you can try and do what you can with calling down there and making arrangements or trying to get a, an idea of when we can expect that load to be moving again. And it boils down to communication between the driver, between the office, and then ultimately to the customer receiving it on the other end.
I understand that part. I'm going to jump in here for a second. We'll use a good case in point. We'll say Walmart, everybody's favorite place. Going in and out of their DCs. Pretty much unless you have a drop set up on the receiving end, you know, you're looking at for lack of better terms, a retarded amount of time in there. Whether you have one pallet or an entire trailer load, minimum time is 2 hours. It just seems to work out that way for some reason. I don't know why, but it does. Sometimes longer, but if, say, for instance, to get the appointment time rescheduled out of Walmart, sometimes requires a small act of God, and that your appointment may be moved from the following day to 3 days out. And unless your company's willing to redo that load or change, you know, park it and move it, it's like you're sitting there twiddling your thumbs, really not, and you're not making anything.
You're absolutely right. When you're coming into, you know, maybe more so on, I would speak from my experience with multiple picks, you know, your expectation if you're loading three or four pickups and you have to try and accomplish that all on a Friday, these particular places wouldn't happen to be open for a weekend or whatever the case is, you know, you have to try and manage to get all these on in one day or work within the hours, the timelines that they've given. And as soon as you're outside of that, you know, you obviously don't have much of an option but to sit and wait. You know, from the company perspective, there's not a lot you can do other than try and recover costs where you can and fairly compensate the driver for their downtime. A lot of this stuff is beyond our control. You try and manage and try and take hold of as much as you can to make sure everything goes smoothly, but too often there's outside factors that are going to mess with that, and between getting the load picked up or sometimes delivered, now you're just trying to find out what's fair for everyone involved, and it's up to the company to try and recover some of those costs and manage that side of it. So,
well, there's, you know, you guys may do things or try to do things, you know, fairly equitably, but there's a fair amount of companies that won't. They either won't repower the load or they'll leave you sitting on it.
Yeah.
And, well, anyhow, I'll hop off the line and let somebody else jump in.
Hey, well, thank you.
It's been a pleasure talking to you guys.
Well, thank you very much for the call. And yeah, you know what, Robert, that's, you know, certainly a valid concern. And you know, that's where you really have to, you know, work well with your dispatch. You're pretty good at performing miracles, and you and I had a pretty good working relationship, and I know when I was stuck down in California, and you gave me a little bit of an interesting dispatch that was going to conflict with my wedding, you managed to pull that out of the hat.
Well. Certainly, there is some benefit working for a larger company. That you know, sometimes you have options that they may not be right there. I know certainly in that particular instance, I had the not just the fear of God, but the fear of a soon to be wife 1,200 miles away that I couldn't possibly mess that one up, and I had to make sure I got you going in the right direction. So, you know, you're looking for the right load to fit, and we're able to pull that one off, I think, just in time, an hour or two before you had to be to the chapel, perhaps. But we got you going in the right direction for sure. And you know, every company is gonna handle themselves differently. But you know, I think yes, we're fortunate with ours that we do have some resources that smaller organizations wouldn't necessarily be able to utilize. And we were able to find the right load to sometimes fit. Hopefully, the majority of the time it works out. So.
Well, and I know my wife certainly appreciated that. Yeah, you caused her a little bit of stress, but you know, it's there was no yelling and screaming and ranting and raving, which was kind of nice because that certainly wasn't going to get me home any faster. And I think we both functioned well under pressure. Again, for those of you listening on the web, letstruck.com, we got a couple of lines open, 347-884-8327, and if you push 1 on your phone, we'll take your calls. Lisa has the night off, so I'll give you the last 4 of your phone number, and we are going to go now to 2302. And you're live with Robert. 2302, you're on. Hello, 2302. Going once. No, we'll come back and we'll try that one a little bit. Let's go to 6187. Good evening. You're live and on the show.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you doing this lovely day?
Well,
very well. Hey, I got a good question about the e-logs. Who's ultimately responsible for making sure you have enough hours to complete a run? Is it still on the driver's back, or is it the dispatcher?
Well, I mean, ultimately, it's the driver. You are the captain of the ship, and will go down with the ship if you happen to tap the iceberg. But Robert, how do we do things so that everybody's on track?
Yeah, we have, I think it's very similar to the program that we run now with paper logs. We have certainly in the office, you have you're updated with the driver's logs daily. You have a program that would be able to project ahead and maybe forecast to see what we have for that day or a couple of days from now. But ultimately, like Dale said, it's certainly the responsibility of the driver who would say that what they're capable of driving for a day, and you're logging it, and certainly the computer's tracking it, but the onus, I believe, still fully lies within the driver to make sure that they're compliant.
Do you think there's a responsibility as well onto dispatch to, kind of have an idea what's going on and what they can expect out of the driver?
Without a doubt, they have to be knowledgeable enough to be able to offer assistance. Again, with all the laws and that. Some of them are a little more straightforward. If you're looking into breaking up sleeper berth and doing those sort of things, obviously it becomes a little more complicated. The office staff have to be knowledgeable. They have to be well informed, and we have to stay as much up to date on this as things are changing, and start to know the ins and outs. But you try and keep it simple. Try and make sure that the time off in the bunk isn't being split, and that you're working within the windows, and we're not deviating from that. And it works with so many other things where the driver and the office are working together to make sure that we're getting the job done legally. So,
all right, because I know that there's a few loads that I had where, according to my calculations, I was like, I don't think so, but it all ended up good enough. Long run anyhow. So maybe that computer does have something to say for itself of knowing what you can do and what you can't.
Yeah, depending on the different programs, of course, that we have a fantastic program that we use every day, and it's allows to forecast and project where you can start looking a week down the road, and again with the driver on the phone or standing beside you can start calculating mileage and having a general idea, and that's an ETA. It is just that. You're never being able to take everything into account, but certainly you should be able to, as you're, most guys, I would think, as they're pre-planning their trip and then looking at where they're going to be able to make it to each day and where they're going to be able to stop and how many hours they're going to be able to use. There's absolutely no reason why a driver in California who might be dealing with that reefer load and some. Expected delays, we shouldn't be able to project fairly accurately when that load should be able to get to destination, if it's 1,200 miles away or 2,300 miles away.
Yep. All right. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks. Thank you very much for calling in. And, Robert, how do we, work together to ensure that, we are making the most out of our hours and not getting too creative?
Well, the knee-jerk reaction is saying just whatever it takes is what you have to log, right?
Yeah.
So there's as far as the creativity part there, from my perspective, I know that there's interpretations can be different, but the fact of the matter is when we have a driver out on the road and he's telling me he's out of hours and what he's used for the day, with our satellite systems, we can obviously see when a driver shuts down, when that truck is moving, when it's not, and we can use a lot of tools at our disposal to make an educated guess or be able to figure these sort of things out. But ultimately, it's the driver on the road and in the seat who is right now drawing those lines that is going to ultimately be in control of what they're in charge of for that day.
Right. Okay. Let's go to 3880 and you're live on the show. Welcome.
Oh yeah, I sort of experienced that up in the Northeast today. 8 hours, close to 9 hours, just to go 300 miles and barely get to my appointment on time. But I don't know if it's ever going to change. I mean, the management part. I picked up a load in Allentown. I'm running with it now, and I call my dispatch, and it's usually going to take like 35 to close to 40 hours to get it out to Long Beach, and they said run with it as far as you can, and then we'll relay it. And I'm going, well, that ain't too good of management. So you're going to drop it off on the weekend shift because you don't want to deal with it yourself? I just couldn't figure that one out.
If again, depending on the company and the size and their resources, there's lots of times where you're going to have a driver run his available logs out to try and get to a destination where it would make sense for the next guy to be able to continue on with it. In some instances, you can be fortunate enough where there's someone in that same general vicinity where you're not running off-road miles in order to rescue a particular load. Other times, you're going to have to, do the reset and carry on. But it of course, that all depends on who you have around you and if there's a better option or not to carry on with that load.
Yeah, I mean, because I only had, it was like close to a 40-hour run. I mean, I sat down and I went through it, paper and my head, and I said, this one just don't seem right. So I'm going to have 20 hours, or I'm going to be 15, 17 hours short. Maybe I get it to Memphis or Little Rock, and then I say, well, someone else has got to take it after that. And I got to do a reset because I'm not getting nothing back at midnight,
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's
what it boils down to is teamwork. You're able to project. You know what you're dealing with. This is where I'm going to be able to make it. This is where I legally believe that I should be able to make it to. This is where I'm going to shut down. This is where I'm going to start my reset. Communicate that back to the office. And now it's absolutely their responsibility, whether or not your weekday staff or your weekend staff are going to be delegated with the task of trying to find someone else to repower or carry on with the load. But you've done your part, and it boils down to simple communication. Outside of that, once you get your hours back, then you're able to keep going. Well, you're doing your part. Now it's up to the other people to earn their keep.
Yeah, here's another thing. Sometimes you just have to be tactful without blowing up or something. I'm up in Boston at a big grocery warehouse that I'm like 3 or 4 hours after I'm already unloaded, and I go in, and one receiver says, "Oh, you got to go talk to the lumper." Lumper says, "You need to go talk to the checker." And I'm going, "Man, oh man, what's going on here?" And I go back, and I talk. He goes, "Oh yeah." He goes, "Well, we usually don't take up individual door numbers. We'll wait until we get like 10 or 12, trucks done." I'm like, "Well, shoot. You just killed 3 hours out of my day." I just told him, man. I said, "We're on electronic logs. I mean, daylight's burning for me, So somehow or another, the shippers and the receivers don't understand that the regulations are getting tighter because they're only doing 8 to 10 and going home, and that's it. I mean, there's no pressure put on them.
They absolutely need to be better educated to understand how this affects the company. And, I don't think I'd be speaking out of turn to quite say simply if they're going to be obligated to compensate or to understand what it's going to take to detain our driver and the equipment at their facility if they're not able to honor certain commitments of when you're going to get loaded and when you can get out of there. So the onus ultimately will fall back onto their bottom line because they have to be able to pre-plan and manage you know, their assets to coincide with what we're trying to get done as well.
Right. I mean, because once I bounced out of, you know, south of Boston, I went to one of our own plants to pick up, and I was talking to the guy, you know, in the shipping department, and he had no clue what electronic log was. He had no clue what the 14-hour rule was, what the 11 drive was. He just didn't know. He wasn't, you know, educated, and I'm going, it's got to be from the top, from the bottom up, or, you know what I mean, vice versa. Everyone's got to be on the same page. If not, it's just going to continue a lot of frustration, I guess. So, anyway, thanks
for
taking my call. So, thank you.
Well, thank you very much for jumping in. And, yeah, you know, Robert, I guess communication seems to be the key. And what suggestions have you got? That makes, you know, I'm starting to see things. I'm out on the road and I'm starting to see things go south. What do I do to make your life easier? That is ultimately going to make my life easier.
You know, Dale, and certainly that's a topic that we could, you know, spend a fair amount of time on, and it absolutely boils down to communication. I preach it daily, and it's something that. On a wide varying set of circumstances are going to be what makes things go really well or really, really bad. We have new drivers that come in through our orientation process, and it's something that, you know, I'll stand up at the front in class and I can't stress enough. And certainly with new staff that are coming in that I'm training as well, you know, the analogy that I use quite commonly is that my view sucks. I look out the same window, nothing really changes much, and there is no way that a guy can be have a true perspective of what's happening out on the road unless they're getting that feedback from the drivers. And unless there's that two-way, and Dale, certainly, you know, you've commented on the relationship that we've had when I was your dispatch and you're out on the road, and the way that relationship was built and how, why we work so well is because, you know, it's a credit to you. It's the way you communicate and someone who is talking in such a way where they're trying to accomplish, of course, not what's best for their own business, but for the company that they're working for. And if there's that two-way communication, problems are a lot more manageable, and especially when you know what you're dealing with. So if you're only dealing with half the problem, one of the two parties is going to get frustrated, and you're not going to find that end result that you're looking for.
You know, and that's, yeah, you're right. So I've, you know, things are not going well, and we've, you know, we're not on the same page. I've got 11 hours to sit there and stew about it. You've through no fault of your own, my perception has been ruffled my feathers, and now this problem is gone from a little one to a huge problem. How do we fix that? I know there's in the past with other carriers and other dispatchers, you know, I've felt like it's, you know, they certainly don't need my input or don't want my input on how to fix this, and just the perceptions there that just shut up and drive the truck. How do I fix that?
Well, I would I'd be very quick to, you know, get on the defense if I ever heard someone, certainly in my staff, you know, relay any message that was remotely close to that. I think that's when I would have to take a step back and regather myself, because that's not the way you're gonna come to a, you know, you're gonna come to resolve the jobs and the stresses that are gonna, couldn't be any, you know, it couldn't be on the any different from one another, from a driver will be dealing with on the road to what a person in the office will be dealing with. And the fact of the matter is if dispatch, certainly what they need to understand is that they can take it personally when a driver calls in and he's having a problem. And if he vents a little bit, again, it has to be done respectfully. You know, no one shows up to work to be abused or to take, you know, to listen to a lot of profanity or that sort of thing. It has to be dealt with in a professional manner. But certainly can't take it personally. You have to be able to recognize the situation for what it is, get to the core of the problem, and try and work through it. And between the communication and pure honesty, I think that, you know, you have to build up that level of respect and know that ultimately there's two people who are trying to come to the same conclusion, and it's just how you're going to get there and what obstacles you're going to deal with. And that's the beauty of the transportation industry, because it's, they're always similar, but they're different, and you just have to use either past experiences or learn something new and take that input from the driver who's out on the road who would have that advice, listen to that, they're there, be able to take that and try and work with it. The answer may not be as straightforward, but there is, you know, quite commonly a piece of advice that has been given to me that has led me to down the right path to find the right answer. So it boils down to communication, talking to one another, that's what I'm dealing with, and what are we going to do in order to get it fixed?
Well,
it seems simple enough, but it's, of course, a little more complicated sometimes.
Yeah, no, and that's, you know, that was one of the things that I really, really enjoyed when I was working with you exclusively, is you always told the truth. It was always the truth, and there was quite a few times I didn't really like the truth, but you weren't telling me something I wanted to hear to make me go away, and it, you know, at the end of the day, it everything all worked out, and it worked, and I really did enjoy that. Hey, for your for everybody hanging on, if you want to jump in, hit one on your phone. If you're listening on the net, 347-884-8327 if you want to jump in. And we are going to go to 3539.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. I got into the show a little bit late, but what I picked up is you guys were talking about EOBRs tonight.
Well, it's actually Robert Enns is the dispatch supervisor with Bison Transport, the carrier that I'm leased to. And, you know, we're talking about dispatch and how to make the most out of a good relationship with dispatch and make everything work together. And, yeah, EOBRs are going to be part of that, is kind of my feeling with CSA 2010. On the horizon, and the FMCSA getting ready to release their proposed rulemaking.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm an owner-operator leased to a company out of Fargo, Polar Reefer Box. And in about February or March, I pulled into the office one day, which normally I try to avoid, and all of a sudden they changed out some equipment, and I was on an EOBR, and I was livid, and I was going to quit, and, you know, I was going to take my tent and go to the other side of the mountain and everything. Well, I'm still there 6 months later, and it's actually improved my life.
You know, and I've heard that. I know we implemented that recently in our turnpike division, and you know, of course, when it was announced that was coming, the sky was falling and the end of the world was coming and Armageddon was right around the corner, and that never materialized. And when I've talked to the guys, they really for the most part actually quite like it once you get used to it, and like any other tool, you got to learn to work with it. Now, the carrier you were leased to, were they in compliance oriented prior to the EOBRs?
Yes, they were. They really tried to be. They of course had some bad actors that caused some significant problems, but they decided to go on to them, and they've done it. I mean, there's some issues that have come up, but I've learned a couple of things since I pull a reefer box. I know about the grocery distribution. And we have one load that I pull fairly regularly. What I mean by that is nine times out of ten after I go home, I'll end up with this load, and it's a really short haul, but it pays real well with three or four drops on the other end. But there's never time to do it there, and I've learned that with the EOBR, I can still drive a mile and a half before it changes my duty status if I'm, quote-unquote, in the bunk. And, you know, doing that or using the eight-hour bunk exception works real well on loads like that. The other thing is I've been DOT'd a couple of times, and every time they realize that I'm on e-logs, they don't even want to look at them. And I've had a couple of violations, you know, 5 minutes over trying to get to the truck stop, and you got held up in construction 10 miles back or whatever type of thing. They've never looked at it. They've just given me a pass on the logs.
Well, and you know what? That is one of the advantages, and I can see that as a benefit. How are you working with dispatch, or how is dispatch working with, you know, the challenge?
That has really been the problem of where the learning curve is, because of the way that our onboard system works. I really don't have to worry about it and touch it. I don't have to put myself on the drive line ever. It will do it as soon as I've moved a mile and a half. And so if I just come in and I stop somewhere real quick and, you know, got to run, as long as I shut the truck down, it puts me on duty, takes me off the drive line and puts me on duty, and then I can go back and edit that with no problem at a later time. But going back to dispatch, they used to dispatch us at 600 miles a day. They've started to scale back on that a little bit. But I'm still seeing the miles. So I don't see an issue there. And I've had weeks, 7 days, you know, Monday through Sunday or whatever, where I've gotten 3,500 miles in and been legal on the EOBR.
Well, and you know what? It's just to kind of let everybody know how much of a dinosaur I am. I can remember trucking when there was no logbooks, and you know, we only had to run logbooks when we went to the U.S. and that was half-assed at best. And then when the law was introduced in Canada, oh my God, we were all going to be at the food bank. Well, you know what?
Right.
We all didn't show up at the food bank, and it was an adjustment. And certainly when I came to Bison, I was only in a part-time status because I was still out there fighting crime and or evil. And it it was a culture shock to the 100% compliance, but you know what? It works, and I didn't go broke, and I've done very well over here. So I think people just need to stand back, take a big breath, and give it a shot. And I don't think it's going to be as bad as we're all making it into.
Now, I have a question for Robert. I haven't really sat down and taken a look at this, and it's just something that I noticed on the Qualcomm, and I never really thought it. But with the EOBR, we can, as a system or as the truck, it can be programmed of when the day restarts. And I know traditionally everybody does it at midnight because that was easy on paper logs. But if you were to do the restart at noon to your time zone instead of at midnight, you would gain time while you're going down the road while you're in the bunk. I don't know if that would be advantageous or not.
And I wouldn't want to speak out of turn either. Like you're talking about the different time zones
tonight at midnight, I will regain what I drove last Monday.
You
understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
Okay. If that were to be changed to noon instead of midnight, I would get those hours back traditionally in the middle of the workday instead of in the middle of the night. So when you're running a tight log, if you will, and you only got 5 or 6 hours to drive today, by restarting at noon, you could pick up, 8-9 hours and be able to finish out your day and keep your logbook rolling.
It's a very good question, and I'm not sure how that would.
Okay.
Yeah, that is an interesting concept, and that's a very good question, and I'm afraid I'm going to have to leave it at that. But you know what? I'm going to dig into that and go through the regulations and just see how that does impact. Because I think that might work. The clock's ticking away, so we're going to try and squeeze in as many calls as I can. So let's go to 8699, and you're live and on the show. Good evening.
Good evening. This is Matt.
Last
caller, he was he's talking about you can choose, and I don't know how often it is. If once a year, once every 6 months, you'd ever be able to change it. But it's up to the carrier to choose if it's midnight to midnight or noon to noon.
Correct, yep.
So that's when you gain your hours back, is either at midnight or at noon. But it's something the carrier has to choose, and it's what you're stuck with. It's, you can't choose for 3 days to run at midnight and then the following week do it on noon logs. It's not up to the driver, it's up to the carrier.
And, in the good old days, all the LTL carriers ran noon to noon.
Mm-hmm.
And I know as an enforcement officer that used to just absolutely make me crazy, because we are so used to dealing with everybody that, resets at, or, their clock starts at midnight, and you'd inadvertently grab one of these LTL guys and start rubbing your hands with glee and realize, geez, now I'm in trouble.
You haven't touched your logbook in 12 hours.
That is an interesting concept.
Yeah, as for a few callers back, we were talking about with shippers and receivers, and I don't think the government is ever going to do anything to improve that. I think it's like you guys were talking with communication between drivers and dispatchers and salespeople. It's going to come down to the point that, it's not only a per-mile rate, but a per-hour rate.
The onus is going to lie on the company providing the service to do their part in informing the shipper or the receiver on their responsibilities.
Yep. A shipper that has a notorious record for taking 8 hours on load, it's going to have to be reflected in the rate.
And well, Matt, I'm...
something that's not going to happen overnight, but, you're running out of time here, so it was... you did a great job again tonight.
Well, thank you very much, Matt. And on that note, Robert, we've got just about a minute to wrap things up. What's our one-minute savior to the industry for working together and not screaming and getting out the dispatcher voodoo doll and working the eyes?
Build the relationships. The fact of the matter is, I think that most people show up to work to honestly do a good job, and that is coming from the person that's behind the desk or behind the wheel. I think it does everyone a lot of good to not necessarily know exactly how to do that job, but certainly have an understanding of what that job involves. And with that, it comes a little bit of understanding. I think that if everyone sometimes is able to look for that patience, it's harder to find depending on the different sort of circumstances, but it goes a long way. Relationships are long-term. We don't jump from company to company. It's not an easy decision to make, and I think that you know, the relationships are should be looked at as for long term, and making sure that, you know, the credibility and approaching it honestly every day to make sure that you can continue to go into your workplace, no matter where it is, and be able to know that you're out there to do a good job, and that's what everyone's looking to get done, is make sure the company is there for another day.
Well, there you go. Robert, thank you very much. I really appreciate you coming on and spending an hour with us. And my time is up, but in another 30 minutes, XM 171 and Sirius 147, Kevin and Lisa are on from Dallas. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in.
I got a star on my car and one on my chest, a gun on my hip and the right to arrest. I'm a guy who's a boss on this highway, so watch out what you're doing when you're driving my way. If you break the law, you'll hear from me. I know I'm working for the state on the highway patrol. Well, you know me when you see me, 'cause my door's painted white.